you could lead him with a tread, but you couldn't drive him with an iron bell. Willie O'Connor left Connor back to Kilkenny, 1998.
Feeling from a difficult angle. Oh, that's a great point. There's a fight on for places down by the River Nore.
There was never a year like 98.
Every year you start out like you hope you're going to win in All-Ireland, and it was no different in 98. Like, if you want to win something, it doesn't really matter who's over you, or you're still going to give 100% yourself.
But that was hard to imagine early in July, when Kilkenny won another Leinster title.
All I want to do is try and win for Kilkenny and do pride in yourself and your parish and your club.
It's the 56th title for Kilkenny.
Awfully gone.
The Offaly selectors, despondent, Babs, Keating there beside the chairman of the Offaly County Board on the right. No doubt about it, Offaly will respond to this defeat in the wonderful sporting way that they always do. They're still in the All-Ireland Championship, remember.
We always want the summer to ignite, to explode into colour and passion and give us stories we can tell forever.
One of the probably traits of Offaly, whether it's a good thing or a bad thing, is that we could compete with the best, but we can also let the weaker teams compete with us, which meant that we weren't going to go out and trounce Mead or Down or Derry or any Antrim or these, and yet we could go out and we could match the Clares, the Corks, the Waterfords and that. So that was very unique, probably, and it's our, whether it's a mindset or that, I don't know. Johnny Pilkington, midfield, Offaly, 1998. Maybe it was the Offaly mentality, but listen, it's not a be-all and end-all if we lose this game.
They were in through the back door, and then there was the heap of sheep.
Offaly hurling is in turmoil today following the shock resignation of manager Babs Keating. In an interview with Radio Sport, Keating said that he met with the county board last night and had decided to stay, but was shocked at a newspaper article today when key player Johnny Pilkington criticised him. It was then Babs decided that he could no longer remain on as manager. In the aftermath of Sunday's defeat by Kilkenny, Keating was critical of his players and said that Offaly were like sheep running around in a heap, and stated the players' attitudes would need to change and wondered if he was wasting his time.
Maybe there was a big clash of personalities up there. Like, Offaly at the time, like, they had household names and hurlers up there, and maybe they didn't see maybe Babs, what Babs was trying to teach. And Babs then was maybe from an older school. And
what really got to me was that he was the manager of Offaly. We were after losing the Leinster final, and then, you know, we had some bad wides, and some very bad wides on the day. We conceded two soft goals in the last 10-15 minutes, and yet it just seemed that he was passing the buck on to the players. And yeah, maybe it was the players' fault, but at the same time, he was the manager. He could have come down Tuesday night and said all that to us in the dressing room. Babs always referred to Offaly as them. It was never such thing as us. They were poor out there, they didn't do this and they didn't do that, you know.
Today, Pilkington hit back and accused Keating of abandoning Offaly's ground hurling and questioned his track record with Offaly and the tactics employed against Kilkenny.
This game is about us. There was never a summer like 98.
Well, it was a wonderful, we'll say, summer for, we'll say, hurling that year. Maybe for more so for off-the-field stuff. Waterford coming through, they lifted the thing, because Wexford were after winning shortly before that, 2 years before that. Clare was still there. Everything lifted again. Babs going, the referee making the mistakes, the pulling, we'll say, at the start of the Waterford-Clare game. Hurling really hit the headlines in 98. Like, some of it was for the wrong reason. But
all of that was still to come. Offaly turned to an unlikely saviour, Bond, Michael Bond.
Michael Bond came on the scene in about a week, I think, tugged out in the dressing room, and off we went. He just said his name was Michael Bond, and he likes Offaly hurling, he likes the way we do it, and let's go and train. No one knew who he was. No one knew what credentials he was. No one knew where he came from. And that all we knew was that he was a teacher, or someone told us he was a principal. He had the Irish, you know, telling us that where you'd have your trainer running, pulling it. He was brushed to gee, and this was going on during training. So he brought, it was a bit of life back into the training sessions. The training sessions had upped in terms of their tempo as well. Now, at the same time, you're talking about a bunch of lads here that were down at the bottom of a barrel. We were after speaking out against the manager. So now the responsibility was on us to pick it up. It wasn't anyone else's fault, only the 30 lads that were there. So in that kind of, that spirit then as well. So Michael Bond came in. I mean, I remember 2 weeks after that, and think training was going great, and we were a bit buzz in it, and life was in it. We thought we were great lads again, and we went down to play Kilkenny in a challenge match. And they gave us a worse hiding than they did in the Leinster final. So we were coming out of that then, and I said, what the bloody hell is going on now, you know?
An old woman often told me about, you could lead him with a tread, but you couldn't drive him with an iron bar.
I have a feeling that Paul Flynn will blast for the goal.
Second game.
The blast and the ball.
The sun shone on Munster.
Paul Flynn, the scorer, and the team's on level.
Paul Flynn, forward, 1998. I think we were losing at half time. We came back with a couple of points. I remember James O'Connor going on a solo run down the field, the whole length of the field under the new stand, and Brian Green going after him. Like, and Brian Green was probably one of the fastest lads in our team, but he couldn't keep in to James, and he, it was a fantastic score. But I just remember saying to myself, Jesus, like, what stamina, you know, the fitness levels these fellas have. It was a magic score. But the outstanding memory, I suppose, the chance that we had to win it in the very end. Boyhood dreams of kind of having a free or something to win a Munster final.
My name is John O'Leary. In 2008, I was elected Secretary of the Waterford County GAA Board, which is a great honour for me and my club and my family indeed. It was a total sellout of the game. There was an excess of 50,000 people in Semple Stadium. From the time Paul Flynn hit that ball that could have given us victory by a point, man that took the game out of the fire on Waterford on many, many occasions.
He couldn't be expecting to score from 111 yards. Or could he on this day of wonders?
I can still see that ball sailing.
Will he go for the greatest glory in the history of Waterford?
It seemed as if I was on my own in the stand, because there wasn't a whisper from nobody while the ball was being lifted and while it was in flight. So it, looking back on it now, it seemed as if I was just there on my own, as if the whole world stopped and there wasn't a sound.
And it's on its way. It's rising.
Then the indication came, and of course the roar from the Clare crowd meant that the day was saved for them.
It went wide from 110 yards.
I can still see that ball sailing.
To injury time. I have a feeling that we'd all be back here shortly again for the replay.
Didn't go our way, kind of drifted off wide, and boyhood dreams of kind of, you know, there was the chance of beating Clare, and I suppose that was the day to do it, you know, when we kind of stuck into them in every way. We were nearly as fit as them. We were kind of, we were probably the better hurling team, but, you know, you don't get your chance to play a lot of hurling against a team like Clare, but, you know, with the lads in midfield, they had just sheer, you know, powerhouses like Ollie Baker and a fantastic centre-back, Sean McMahon, and, you know, well, every Clare back was, you know, let alone a good hurler, but they had plenty of other attributes to go with it. But we kind of matched them and kind of outscored them in a small way, but, you know, still, that was probably our best chance to win that day. But we all know what happened the second day.
Fergus Toohey, Clare Castle, County Clare, wing forward, victorious Clare team, 95-97. I think the psychological barrier had turned with us, that if you get a chance to rattle at a favourite and you don't win, you know, you feel you've lost it. And like Nannings, everyone would have described it as wild caged animals and stuff like that, you know, and it wasn't for the soft approach. But we hopped on the bus. I remember we going back into the Kincora Hotel, having a team meeting there, and Lochnane bringing us out because the place was kind of full of supporters, and to a lovely garden out the back, steps down and absolutely red as the riot act. And, you know, there was a few people here eavesdropping as well, and he didn't care. Like, you know, he just read us the right act. That kind of performance, we thought the performance was adequate enough, like, but we were amateur compared to where he was coming from. Like, he had standards set. And so we went back and we regrouped the training, and training was very intense then. But it was quite intense. I wouldn't say we did too much physical or too much hurling in between, but there was lots of spiffs, like there was lots of chats, and it was all directed in one direction for Waterford.
I could feel a tension atmosphere all around the ground and people standing up, and I said,
"Game three, it felt like the crowd was on the pitch, the skies opened."
And I felt maybe because of the previous game, both teams were there, if you like, to put on a marker. And maybe that's where the marker was set at the very start of the game. My name is Willie Barrett from Ard Finlay in Tipperary. In 1998, I was the referee for the Munster final of that year between Clare and Waterford. I was also the referee for the replay in Tullis a week later. But it's 10 years on.
You could feel it. I don't know what it was that day. It was lashing rain, but you could feel when we came out onto the pitch, there was just something, I don't know, was it? I know people have said it to me in the past, looking, they felt an uneasiness in the stand or something, but I could actually feel it on the pitch. There was a kind of a buzz or an anticipation. I don't know what it was, but there was kind of a different atmosphere than previous matches or other matches, but as it turned out, there was.
So too does Fergus Toohey, four-point hero of the 1995 All-Ireland final win. So out of the clear attack...
I recall before I went out in the field that I remember being told by council officials to ensure before the ball was thrown in that everyone was in their correct dugouts and sitting down, and not have fellas running around the touchline or running around the sideline, etc. So everyone was to be seated. As I went out on the field and had a look around, it was drawn to my attention, I think it was my linesman Pat O'Connor drew to my attention, that people were not in their dugouts.
We'll be keeping you right up to date from everywhere, but the match has started a wee bit early at Thurles again. Let's go straight to Micheál.
Yes, indeed, and a hurley was broken before the game even started.
And then I went down to the Clare dugout to insist that they go into the designated area in the dugout.
And we do know that there are strict guidelines today on pitch incursions. Once again, Willie Barrett is the man in the middle for a mighty Munster final replay confrontation. And a mighty confrontation too between the elements in their full raging force, wind and rain. That adds to the tension and the drama and the excitement. Now, Tony,
I remember looking out at the crowd and the crowd were getting very excited. And there was fierce tension in the game. There was absolutely fierce tension. And I looked back and I could see that players were getting to know each other. So with that, I moved out to the centre of the field, as I call it, and I threw in the ball almost immediately to get the play moving and try and take the tension out of the game. At the start, there was a lot of pulling went on. I remember quite a bit of pulling, and I awarded a free to Waterford.
It was rushed, and all you're doing is pulling in, like, and referee should be, I would feel myself, be looking at him, staring him, telling him, "We're on, lads," instead of just, he's back to him, turn around and then bang, you don't even know whether the ball goes in straight. Will it go 2 yards over your man's shin? Will it go 2 yards over your shin? All you're doing is pulling in, like, and everyone was wanting it. You could smell it in the crowd, like, you know. It was pull, and just see where the ball was going to end up, like. And
Waterford won the toss. It's a crossfield breeze. The rain pumping down.
And they were up there as well, equally, but our intensity, maybe the wild animal that he wanted us to be, came out in us.
We had a difficulty. I had a difficulty getting the ball away from the centre of the field to get out of the game, but I awarded a free to Waterford.
I'm not sure who's guilty or anything like that.
The game was very tough in the opening, maybe 7 or 8 minutes to recover.
Dan Shanahan put out by Liam Doyle, his second touch of the game.
Crossfield breeze, the rain pumping down.
And a first touch.
Down towards Micheál White.
Brian Flannery, who's playing at right full back.
The ball picked up by Paul Flynn near the sideline.
Paul Flynn, his first touch.
Pulled on him.
Does well to
he gets inside the 20.
And he's round there and stay in play. He showed wonderful balance. Then the ball ran away from him.
Drops the ball, gets it again. Circles out to the 21 on the old stand side. A shot from Flynn.
And off his left side.
On the 6 minute of the game, a melee broke out, and I remember the two players involved booked them and sent them off. They were Brian Lohan and Michael White. They were involved in this, and I felt they had to go, so I sent off both players. And
but it got out of hand before the ball was thrown in.
From there on, the concentration certainly was on the ball. And
like, I mean, I don't like talking about other GA players, but I think what Peter Queeley went through before the ball was even left Willie Barrett's hands has no place on a GA pitch. You know, there was a ball down the corner and Tony Brown got flattened off the ball by the same player. Like, I personally was sickened and disgusted by it, but to me, hurling is a skill game, not a game where those type of tactics have to be used, you know. So the game went on, you know, Brian Lowen and Mike Hallwhite got sent off, probably because of what went before. The Clare were just physically stronger, more experienced that day. They got a grip around midfield, I think, and their half-back line was fantastic, but they were more used to that type of occasion. I think that winning hurling matches by not playing hurling is kind of an art in itself.
We had a great motto in ourselves, was seize the day.
And it's a pity if this day, that there's another Waterford player struck in the 50-yard line. It's Tony Brown. He's gone to the ground. If the linesman or anyone saw that, they would certainly be put off. And this is a dreadful display of bad temper by the players on both sides. But Tony
we knew 10, 15 minutes to go that we were up in them, like, and we got a run. Like,
and he appeared to be minding his own business, and it wouldn't surprise me if a player or two got lost very, very early.
There's no way Waterford were going to come back on that specific day. Now.
Martin Kiley is down there on the side.
But we were dominating every physical battle that day.
Yes, Tony Brown is on the ground over there, Michal. There's quite a number of players, and John McCarthy is in there now as well. There's a number of fair players being spoken to, and I know that Ollie Baker ran across in front of John McCarthy, trying to stop him to going over to Tony Brown. This is quite unbelievable.
We didn't think anything of the Colin Lynch start until really it kicked off the following day on the Desi Cahill show there. But I remember looking at the paper the following day, and there was Colin Lynch and Tony Brown and the jerseys off. I'd say they probably had them even swapped at that stage, and they were embracing each other like flesh on flesh. Like, and John Loughnane was able to tell us that the manager, Joe McCarthy, he'd come over with about four minutes to go and shook his hand on the line and say, like, you know, better team won in the day. And that was all. The game was over as far as we were concerned, and until the next day, it did literally kick off, like, you know.
I think the Gaels ran on when the final was over. But I do not recalling anyone actually even coming to me at the final whistle from either Waterford or Clare about anything. I'm blowing the final whistle, coming into the restroom and talking off. I would maybe talk to my umpires after the match, immediately after that. But I noticed one thing, that the umpires weren't talking much after the match. I deducted from that they weren't happy with the performance, because I know my heart and soul, they often said to me, well done, good match. And I remember someone come into the restroom, I can't remember who it was, and he said there was things happened out there that shouldn't have happened. But I remember coming out then and, you know, going to my car after the match, and nobody said a word to me, and from any side nobody said a word to me. I remember I stayed in the restroom for maybe, had a shower and all the usual, for maybe 3 quarters of an hour after the match, and went to my car and went away home. And that was it.
I hear that sports call, but at the time we probably laughed about it, you know how could it affect anything, like, you know, but it did definitely picked up momentum, like, it flew out the door then, like, and it was awful, and maybe Desi was just throwing it out as an old, you know, something to people driving home in their car from work and ring in, give us a chat, like, but Jesus, I don't know, was there any call allowed from Clare on it?
Monday, the 20th of July, sports call explodes.
Sports call on this Monday evening. We've had a huge reaction already.
Con Murphy, presenter of Sports Call at the time, which went out on a Monday evening after the weekend's matches.
Three in one sentence there. You can call us on the usual telephone numbers, 1850 857777.
I was presenting Sunday Sport on the Sunday afternoon on RT Radio, and I mean, as soon as we handed over to our commentary team, you could tell that the air was bristling before the ball was even thrown in. Of course, all hell broke loose, which came across very vividly in our radio commentaries. And I was watching the pictures on the screen. I was thinking to myself, we're going to have a great sports call program tomorrow evening.
Han, you have no... I had 5 children with me at the game yesterday. And for the first time, I went to matches in 35 years. I was actually afraid.
I knew straight away
as to what could develop.
This is a big talking point. This is going to really...
Well, what could have developed?
God only knows. You saw the lunatic...
in the build-up to the game, because we'd been hearing about the fact that Clare weren't going to be pushed around and there wasn't going to be any kind of a walkover from either side.
Now, he pulled across Tony Brown.
We had a recording system, so we were able to, apart from the calls that came in live while the programme was on air, people were able to leave messages on a recorded phone system, and we would then subsequently get back to them.
And I mean, the antics of him before the game started.
Are you talking about the incident with Tony Brown?
That's correct, yes. He actually hit Tony Brown across the back of the leg, hit another wasp puller, and then he hit his own man.
Are you being a bit harsh on Colin Lynch?
I'm certainly not.
And instantly,
that set the trend.
We started getting phone calls about this incident. And the one thing that struck me when we came in the following morning, there were probably three or four times the normal volume of calls on our recorded system that we would normally have. So it took a long time to actually go through them all.
I met Tony Brown 25 minutes ago, and the chap, I'm telling you, you should see him tonight.
Clearly today was, who's to blame?
Feeling off. And I would feel ashamed of my life.
You know, really, we've so many people we want to get in on this.
I know that.
One last thing.
We are not bitter over losing a Munster final.
I'm a national school teacher of a long
But we are bitter over the treatment that was dished out. And if it was the other way around, we'd be lambasted by Loch Nan.
Now, David, no, well, you can't say that, David. You can't say that. You just cannot say that. They played some superb hurling in the second half.
Why wouldn't they? I mean, what happened?
In terrible conditions, and they played great
what
stuff.
What happened in the first 3 minutes?
Tony Brown
turned around. He then turned around.
Is curling become such a dangerous game now, and the bully boy game?
I think it's very sad.
Has to be a
and the one thing that struck everybody on the production team was the fact that so many calls were either from Waterford or from neutrals, making comments about the approach that Clare had taken to the start of the game.
There was a deliberate...
And very few calls had come in support of the Clare players or from people from the county of Clare. Obviously, we're striving for some kind of balance in the programme. But 90, I would say a good 90% of the calls that came in were either, as I say, from Waterford or from neutrals who had a very negative view of the tactics that Clare had approached on the day.
Loch Nan was reported in today's paper saying that, you know, the nutters were going to phone up the radio stations.
He had gone written all over.
I think, for example, it's grossly offensive to see that sort of thuggery going on a field and people standing up for it and apologising.
You reckon
for
that
it.
The Munster Council just won't have
the
guts
to do anything about it?
Daly hit Shanahan. Shanahan went down. Shanahan got up and he hit Daly in the shoulder back.
David, you are entitled to your view, but you can't state that as a matter of fact.
Good
clashing of a hurley. See the hurley's been broken with a man-to-man clash. A good man-to-man shoulder. We all love to see that in Munster hurley.
Millions of calls here from Waterford. 0345 85 77. But what about Gerlach Nan's point, Elizabeth, that, you know, a lot of people on this programme for the last...
Okay, well, it sounds like a very anti-Clare programme tonight. I'm sorry about this.
Millions of calls here from Waterford.
The Munster...
You know, I'd have to say it and be honest about it. You know, the criticism on the paper of me in particular, which I'd have to, you know, say, if you're refereeing the match, you've obviously got to take the criticism. And affected me, I'd have to say it affected me that particular year. And I wasn't appointed to any further inter-county games in that particular year. You know, you had to perform, and you still have, but the letters I got... from obviously people were annoyed, and I didn't answer the phone. I stopped answering the phone then after a while. My wife took the calls, and unfortunately, she got the brunt of it. It was a difficult time. My daughter was in France, and I decided we booked a flight and went out with the young boy. I got away from it all. It was a very difficult time. Somebody once said to me, it's nice to have your photograph in the paper. I picked up the paper for, got a paper for the next 12, 13 days, and I saw my photograph on it every day. And I was just, it didn't add anything to me, I can assure you that much. I just wanted to become oblivious, if you like. You have to admit that it deeply, deeply affected me. And I didn't know at that time whether I'd have the confidence to go on refereeing or not. But you know, you get one chance in a GAA field of making a decision on any given day, on any Sunday, in any match. And you know, you can't change anything. Absolutely nothing that night or the day after, anything like that.
Then we did circle the wagons after that, like, and letting down the hatches. We were in an All-Ireland semi-final at that stage. We were preparing then for Offaly and... because we were so young, but maybe the management were a bit older and wiser. They had seen that develop with other county teams as well. And I remember Jor saying that he wanted us to be like the Meath footballers, that, you know, everyone did hate him. And maybe Clare were always coming from where they needed an edge anyway, to be honest. You know, if it was the opposing manager, if it was the opposing dressing rooms, anything at all, we were looking for an edge, you know, because we were starved for success as well. Like, you know, we just, you know, many of the team had just gone out and played hurling and maybe it wasn't enough, so we were just looking for an edge. And he wanted us to be, he said he'd like to be like Meath footballers there, where everyone in the country did hate him.
5th of August, 2 days before the Munster Council meet to decide on Colin Lynch, 4 days before the All-Ireland semi-final, Ger Lochnane answers back.
At the All-Ireland quarter-final in Dublin, on less than the week, the chairman of the Clare County Board was sitting in the VIP section of the stand.
Mm-hmm.
Seated directly behind
him. No, we won't mention any names.
No, we're mentioning no names, I understand. I'm going to mention no names. Seating behind him, they said directly behind him were three priests, right? They discussed, they weren't watching the match, obviously. Their main discussion was on the Clare team, which went on the lines that the Clare team were tinkers, Lochnane was a tramp, and the Clare team must be on drugs. This was the general tenor of their conversation. When one of the priests then piped up and he said, "Don't worry, the Munster Council were going to get Lochnane up in the stand the next day and that Colin Lynch would be suspended for 3 months." Now, remember that this event took place 3 days before the Munster Council met to discuss the referee's report or to discuss this incident.
Mm.
Now, so what it would seem was that a small group within the Munster Council must have met to discuss this. They tried Colin Lynch. They found him guilty. They delivered the sentence and announced the decision to their friends,
to
whoever, to a select few, before the meeting took place. Now, what's that, Colin? If this happened in a court of law, if a judge had a case coming before him, and if he announced the decision of that he was going to give before the case came before
him, he'd be disbarred.
The judge would be disbarred. Why shouldn't those officers pay the same penalty for not giving due course to the law and not giving fair play to Colin Lynch?
Okay. At that point in hand, there's a number of the national media joining us throughout the country this morning. They will naturally say, Ger Lochnane, living in the realm of fantasy, he's been watching too many episodes of The X-Files. Do you have proof?
I don't even know what The X-Files is about. I have the clue what The X-Files is. I never watched The X-Files. Maybe that is some kind of fantasy. I have proof that this is it. I have two witnesses that witnessed this incident. And not alone that, but one of them, the chairman of the Clare County Board, challenged the three priests and then walked out. Well, so this incident definitely took place.
The day before the Munster Council meeting, Marty Morrissey meets Ger.
Do you think the Munster Council has a certain agenda against you personally, Ger Lochnane, and the Clare team?
Going on the referee's report and the linesman's report, both Colin Lynch and Tony Brown were booked for rough play. We have a copy of that report. Now, it looks like that the Munster Council are behaving in a way in which one person is only going to be penalised.
Is there any way that Colin Lynch can get off on Friday night?
If the natural rule of justice prevails, that a man is innocent until proven guilty, if that prevails, which is one of the basic rights of every human, every person on this island, and one of the rights that people have fought and died for, if that prevails, then Colin Lynch will be playing for Clare on Sunday.
It has been announced officially that Ger Lochnane will not be on the sideline. What effect does that have, do you think, on you and indeed on the team?
It has no effect whatsoever.
Can this young Offaly side upset the Clare bandwagon? We assess the mood in
8 p.m. on the night of the Munster Council meeting. Sideline view.
And we're live from Limerick as Donnie Nealon and his Munster Council colleagues meet Clare's Colin Lynch. He's before the Munster Council tonight in Limerick, and there's much speculation that he could get a 3-month ban for his actions in the Munster final replay. And that meeting is taking place right now at a Limerick hotel. So let's go there live and join Marty Morrissey. Marty, what's happening?
Good evening, Des. Welcome to the Limerick Inn, where the Munster Council is now underway. That meeting has started. I can reveal exclusively that Clare went to the High Court today seeking a postponement of tonight's meeting so that Colin Lynch, the Clare midfielder, could face his accusers. But that effort failed in the High Court. The sad news, unfortunately, is that it's been a traumatic period for Colin Lynch with all this media speculation. But last Monday, his grandmother suffered a stroke, and just hours ago, the life support machine was turned off. And we send our sympathies to Colin Lynch and the family. Earlier, just around 6:30 or so this evening, delegates from the Munster Council...
In a bizarre twist, it turned out that Colin Lynch's grandmother had not, in fact, died. Marty apologised.
Clare manager Gerlach Nan, who was not requested to attend the meeting, arrived with
12:30
Chairman Robert
that
Frost
night.
And County Secretary Pat Fitzgerald, and told reporters that Lynch would not attend because of a family illness. Then Lucknan and the two county officers adjourned to a side room, having, according to the council, unsuccessfully requested as a group to inform them why Lynch didn't attend. A standoff ensued, with Clare refusing to tell council why Lynch was absent. After midnight, council PRO Father Seamus Gardner said a decision on Lynch wouldn't be revealed until the player himself was informed. Lucknan was more frank.
The first comments I made on Clare in that interview was that he was going to get 3 months. What happened tonight? Got 3 months. No representation allowed from Clare. You can draw your own conclusions about that, you know, and people all over the country can just ask themselves one question. The one question I'm asking myself coming over here tonight is, do I want my young fella to be a member of an organisation like this?
No. No, we didn't think we could lose. You know, I suppose we had got the wake-up call on the first day against Waterford as well, so that wasn't going to happen anymore. Like, you know, and, you know, there'll always be an incident in training that would sharpen the minds. Maybe some fella would get an embezzling or something that might be thrown off the panel for some misdemeanour, and that would sharpen everyone up again, like, you know. There'd be a foot soldier sacrificed along the way. Because there were anyone that wasn't focused would have been shafted from it. Like, you know, there was no baggage. You know, sometimes you see teams that win All-Irelands, they have an entourage, you know, with them in a circus. But there definitely was no baggage with this clear team. Like, Nan wouldn't stand for, like, you know, what he wanted was hurlers and people in that frame of mind. I suppose that Gerlach Nan had been banished to the stands as well. When he came out on the pitch, it was like I'd never seen it before. He'd walked, we went to... When he came out the tunnel of the steps of the Cusick stand, we were on the left-hand side, and he walked out towards the 21, like, and the cameras were just clicking, 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 and they were running back, and they were getting pictures of him. And it was real, real, you know, I know the players were the centre of attention, but it was, he was definitely up there with us, like, you know. And then he had to go back and take his seat there beside us in the dugout, and... I was summoned in from the bench there about the start of the second half, and they asked me where did I want to go. You know, I would have been a wing forward or centre forward. I just said, put me in there on the wing. I says, and I, fortunate enough, then I scored about 1-2 in 20 minutes. I put in.
August 9th, Croke Park, Offaly and Clare, All-Ireland semi-final. It was boiling hot, but there was also a sense of relief that we'd got that far.
Johnny Pilkington, when Gerlach Nan had taken his eye off the ball altogether, maybe he's just taken Offaly for granted. That, well, listen, Offaly have gone, they've done their best, their manager is gone as well, and maybe he took the eye off the ball. Maybe if it was Kilkenny that were coming into that semi-final, you wouldn't have got the reaction out of Gerlach Nan. Maybe if it was Galway, you wouldn't have got the reaction out of Gerlach Nan as it did. So, I mean, Clare definitely came into that game not with their eye on the ball, far from it, and so it was our opportunity to take it to them. Clare were lucky in the end that they got a point from a debatable free to draw it. I think with 5 minutes to go or five or 6 minutes to go, Clare were actually ahead. Now they will tell you they didn't play that well. Destiny is something I kind of believe in. Went off on a solo run earlier on in that, about 10 minutes to go, and again, as usual, ran into a dead end and lost the ball and that. And it was too knackered to get back out to the middle of the field. And in our team itself can rotate. I mean, you know, you just say to Paddy Mulhere, Paddy, just tip out there for 5 minutes and off he will, or, you know, or Johnny Dooley, any of them. I mean, we could do that. And while I was in corner forward, we got a free. David Fitzgerald batted it out, and he batted it up. straight in front of him, so he just jumped up and tapped it in. And that brought Offaly, Clare were actually, I think, 2 points or 3 points ahead at that stage, so that brought us back level and lifted Offaly, or the whole team lifted again. And I got back out then to the middle of the field and got another ball, went on a run and tapped it over the bar.
On towards Johnny Pilkington, the man who got the goal. Here comes Pilkington, 20 metres out, he's put it over the bar. Johnny Pilkington with a goal and a point, and Offaly lead by a point. Offaly had shown us no form whatsoever this year.
That was to put us a point ahead, right, I think, that, you know. So we were coming in from a team again with 3 or 4 points, probably 2 or 3 points behind. We stuck at it and we'd gone ahead, and it was up to Clare then to get the free, to draw it.
Jamie has got 5 out of 7 frees so far. This the most crucial. This to make it level. He's done it. Jamesy O'Connor with 6 points, and it's 113 to 113. Now it's at the discretion of the referee. They've been leveled 7 times.
So I suppose both sides at the end of it all were happy coming out with a draw. We would have probably been disappointed that we didn't get the win. So that would have put us back psychologically a bit in the second game. But Clare were delighted, you know. They hadn't Ryan on the ball, they were missing Colin Lynch, they were missing Brian Lohan, and they're after drawing with Offaly.
I hope all those people who castigated Clare over the past few weeks feel a little bit guilty now about what they said. There was the dirty stroke struck out there today. Two great teams that battled it out to the line. It ended a draw, and we'll have another day.
Thank you very much, Sherlock Dan.
Well, there's no doubt about it. Everything that's been said.
August the 15th.
The massive car bomb in Omagh exploded at 3:10 in the heart of the town's busy shopping area at the junction of Drumrah Avenue and Market Street. A telephone warning earlier saying the bomb was at the courthouse 400 yards away meant that many people were evacuated from the courthouse end of the town and inadvertently walked straight into the path of the bomb. People who were on the scene almost immediately described what they saw as a battlefield, with bodies lying on the road and in and around the shattered buildings. Rescuers tore hoardings off windows to use as makeshift stretchers. So great was the number of the casualties, two buses were used to ferry those who could walk to the Tyrone County Hospital.
It was actually horrible to actually look at it.
How many people did you...
I've seen at least 20 people all just lying there. I mean, people are asking me for help, and there was one lady, her arms were just hanging off, and I mean, it was... There's nothing I could do, you know, you just felt helpless, you know, saying to them, the ambulance is coming now, and actually the shock, but I escaped, I was so lucky, sitting at those lights 10, 15 yards away, my car's in ruins just.
And it was, the scene was utter carnage, it was just a battlefield, there were people lying everywhere on the ground, there were people screaming, there were children screaming for their parents, people running in all directions.
Saturday, August the 22nd. After much agonising, the replay went ahead. There were 3 minutes silence and an air of unreality in Croke Park. People wondered what we were doing there. For a while, it seemed to affect the players.
Right, sir, who's going to win it?
Yeah, it's a hard one to call. The atmosphere is unreal, first of all, like, you know, and everyone's thoughts are in Loma, and often have their own problems today as well, because young Paddy Mulhere's father died very suddenly, and he would be a brother of Pod's, the selector, so they'd have, you know...
We were stuck in traffic for about 3/4 of an hour. So we only arrived into Croke Park at maybe 3 o'clock with a match on at 3:30. There was supposed to be 3 minutes of silence, and the two teams were supposed to be out in the field. When you go back and you look at it, you'll see the Clare team, the whole panel there, out in their tracksuits, and the Offaly lads weren't. And the reason was that we were back in the dressing room, just getting tugged out.
Jimmy Coney is my name, and I refereed the All-Ireland semi-final between Clare and Offaly in 1998. I suppose the most thing that stick out in your mind was it was the fierce determination that Clare had the second day. They felt that they didn't huddle well the first day, and they got out of jail by getting a draw out of it, and I'd say that they were out to make amends on the second day, and they were huddling out of their skins. Got some great scores. We all know what Offaly did in the past, and was always capable of doing, both in hurling and football. You could never write them off until the final whistle would go. They were coming, and they were coming hard at Clare towards the towards the end of the game, they were coming back at Clare.
We were at nothing, we were at sea. But in the second half, again, we went back out and you just start chipping away. You probably, you don't believe that you're going to get back this 10-point lead. But what you do, though, is that you just keep chipping away. You take your points, another point and another point. And all of a sudden, there's 6-7 points in it, you know. Billy Dooley scrambled a goal or whatever. And now all of a sudden, there's only 5 or 6 points in it, you know. And I think we got a second goal then as well. So all of a sudden, we were 10 points down. And now you're in shouting distance. And you're in shouting distance with a good 5 minutes left in the game.
Offaly, who never really yielded to any opposition, even to the Munster and All-Ireland champions, gave it their all in the second half, had to make up an 8-point gap.
So there's nothing to say. You get a ball, you bang, you put it over the bar, there's 3 points in it, and then there's two, and then there's one, you might get a goal and go ahead. So you just keep chipping away. And that's what we did, is it, chipping and chipping and chipping.
And the referee has blown up his whistle, but I think he's blown up before time. I think there are 2 minutes left.
Would we have got a goal? We don't know. A lot of teams have felt the pain of us getting a goal down through the years.
But on my watch here, there are another 2 minutes to go.
You can say that Alan Markham had the ball. He was just about to put it over the bar. You could say that that's only 4 points and still within shouting distance, you know.
Well, it's handshakes all around.
Jimmy blew up and was whisked off the field. And to me, when he did blow the whistle, to me, right, that was it. Because I felt that, you know, the Clare team were better that day. We were better in the first half. And you know, we just ran out of time, as I felt, and we clawed it back a bit, but it ran out of time, and that's the end of it. Good luck. That's the summer over again.
I can tell you that the teams for the next match are already out on the field.
And then I saw my umpire coming out, and he had his hand up with his 5 fingers out, and then I thought to myself, oh, Jesus.
Jimmy Cooney's escorted off the field.
I mean, all the photographers were nearly pushing one another out of the way to get a photograph of me. After that shoot, it was hullabaloo altogether.
Clare has been a lot of controversy recently, but this is one that they didn't create.
Exactly, but I mean, awfully people here, as you can see, are very angry, and why wouldn't they be? They feel they have been begat, and I mean, a mistake has been made. No doubt about that.
It was only upstairs in Croke Park, you can look out into the field, it was just there at the premium level, you know. And it was only up there for people going on down on the field. So I went, we're looking out and says, Jesus, all these lads going on the field, what are they going to do?
There's 5 minutes left.
Then we go to the dressing room, then we go in and we're inside and there's silence. We know we're wrong. Then there's some of the security lads come in telling us that the Offaly people are out on the pitch and they're digging up the pitch and, oh God almighty, this is getting worse by the minute. Then you think you're after causing all this and this is Croke Park. And the umpires told me that I didn't tug in for about 2 hours. I don't remember that. I remember my wife coming down from the stands and she was eventually let in maybe after about an hour. She was crying, of course. I didn't know what state I was in. So you're crying and you're crying because of what has happened, but then you're worrying as well about what is going to happen. Then they said, can't you tug in anyway, like, put on your clothes, take a shower, tug in. And eventually I did that, but I didn't really want to either. I didn't know what I was really doing. And then the Croke Park were anxious to get a referee's report as quickly as they could. So they asked me, would I be willing to do my referee's report there and then? And I said, I don't have any problem with that. So then they put me into a room on my own and they gave me as much time as I wanted. And I did the referee's report and I put it into a sealed envelope and the official took it away with him. And then after a while they asked me, what did I want to do or something? I said, if I got a pint of Guinness this minute, I said, and I wouldn't take it down in my head. I said, my tongue is gripped to my head. So then the security said, we'll take you up to one of the bars and we'll get you a pint of Guinness along at the umpires and that. And then they're talking and walkie-talkies to one another and we go up in the lift and when we arrive in a bar, they called a pint of Guinness for me. And then there were a number of people there and they must have thought I was going to be in trouble there as well because they whipped me away from there again and I had to leave a pint of Guinness after me. The next thing they said, that the best decision to do now is we'll go to some hotel nice and quiet and we'll have a bite to eat. And yeah, we went down to the Aisling Hotel and that was nearly as bad. We got in there and it was coming up near, it was actually news time. And I was flashed across the screens News 10. And the waitress was going around taking orders, and she looked at the television and she looked at me and she looked again, and I knew what was in her face and in her mind. Are you the lad that's coming up there? And before she got a time to say anything, I said, yes, that's me, by the way. Yeah, yeah. I just wanted to get home. I knew I had no business in Dublin. I was also made aware, like, that there possibly could be consequences with you know, phone calls. And we had a very young family at the time, very, very young, four young kids. I wanted to be at home, to be there with them as well, just in case that there could be incidents as well. I was told that there possibly would be. Phone non-stop, and kids were small, and they wouldn't drop the phone either, and daddy was going to be killed, and the house was going to be burned, and oh, there was lots of things going to be done to me. Of course, when I picked the phone myself and asked the speaker to, could I meet him on his own, anywhere he wanted, he wouldn't be too long about leaving down the phone, but there was a good bit of that for a while, yeah. Would have lasted up to Christmas. And after Christmas, if it's one of the girls that answered the phone, is your daddy a referee? And they'd say, of course, straight out, he is, yeah, yeah. Well, tell him that we're going to come and get him, and we'll kill him, and you'll have no daddy. And by the way, if you don't tell him, we'll kill you as well. And there was a lot more than that. Lots of different things came. Burning down the house, they were going doing that, of course, and they were going burning the car. And didn't they get me anyway? They knew me from television. They were going to get me anyway. They'd get me at some stage along the line. I was going to be got.
Fergus Toohey, Clare Castle, County Clare.
But we proceeded then to get the bus in and into town, and we had a bit of grub into Burlington and a few more pints, and thinking, you know, obviously everyone was talking about the 2 or 3 minutes that the referee had blown up, but we thought we were drinking so much that we felt we were in an All-Ireland semi-final or an All-Ireland final. And I remember Joe Loughnane coming into the bar then around 11 o'clock, and I happened to share the lift with him going up then, and he told me that the game was on next Saturday, after coming back from a meeting that night, how he had met Don Corleone and the whole lot, and there were his words, and it was going to be sorted, and Lynch was back. And so maybe, you know, with the thought of Lynch being back, we thought we would be unstoppable. But
Colin Lynch never came back.
We went back to the Spa Hotel. We started off talking anyway about training and the replay next week, and lads were talking about training the next morning, and one or two of us were saying that not much point in training the next morning, lads, there won't be a replay on this anyway. I said, no, we're going to train, we're going to get the replay and all that. And it developed into an actual argument and the whole lot, and I just remember that there was one lads were saying this and the other lads were saying that, and it just developed into a row fueled by a 3 or 4 pints and this, that and the other. But we had left the meeting just broke up, and we left the meeting with the thing that was training the next morning at 3 or 4 in the evening, I think it was.
We trained in, we went out to the Belfield, there at the university, the following morning to do a bit of running, and we did it under the guidance of Mike Mack, and we came back, we had another shower, went inside into Burlington, got a bus down, stopped in the Putchings Still, had a steak dinner, hopped on the bus again, so it was a duration to come home. It mightn't have been the best preparation for us a week later, like, because we probably should have flew down, and, you know, I'd say we were on the road the bones of 7 hours. Because it was lashing rain, it was hailstone hopping off the window that day. We were very flat in. Very flat in Turles. You know, some of the boys did play well. Now, I personally didn't play well. And very flat. And I think Johnny Dooley in the corner caused havoc as well. I think he's got about 7 or 8 points. And maybe he could have done with a change as well. But that didn't happen.
We're here in Burr. You have the whole of north of Offaly who are absolutely kind of mad supporters. They follow Offaly in the good and the tick times. There's hurling up there, but it's mainly football. And you had them all coming down through Burr, flowing on, horns beeping, blowing at 9, 10 o'clock in the morning on down to Turles. Into Turles, and I mean, it was just a party atmosphere there in Turles. The square was packed, and there was a traffic jam coming into Turles 2 hours before the match. So we got a bit of a police escort into the square. You know, just the crowds of Offaly people were just banging and clapping and the whole lot, you know. We just seemed to feed off it. I mean, and we went in the side room of the hotel and up, and we had our sandwiches and we had our tea. We had a discussion what was going on ahead, out again and back up, and the crowds of people there. It was just something very, very special. But it was a very special day for Offaly people, and maybe it was because it wasn't just probably Offaly hurlers that were going down there. This was really probably one of the first days where you had Offaly County, because we wouldn't have got a replay unless the people didn't sit in the field. And the fact that they did sit in the field meant that, you know, the authorities there, the GA authorities, could have just said, right, he played 3 minutes up, you know, he's true, but listen, we'll go ahead with it, you know. But the fact that they had sat in the field really pushed it home, and I mean, it brought it to the rest of the country's attention as well. So this all came down into Turles and that, and we went out. I mean, again, probably the best game of the three. It's not that Offaly were any better. I mean, what people have to realise that at the end of three matches, you add up the scores were still level. You know, they were 3 points ahead. We won by 3 points in Turles, you know. But it was to be our day. I mean, Stephen Burns as well made two, three fantastic saves, where another day, you know, Clare would have got them. But it just wasn't to be their day, you know. After that, I mean, you come home, you back into Burr, horns and that, car still going through, blowing all day, you know, so from about maybe 8, 9 o'clock in the morning till 10, 11 at night. It was one probably the most special day that Offaly hurling has. Well, definitely my time for atmosphere and everything. But what it was the special thing about it was that this time, because the people had sat in the field, they probably felt that, you know, they had a part to play in it. You know, it was just that special thing. And I mean, we were never going to lose the All Ireland after that. Kilkenny were never going to beat us. And it was a strange one. I never felt at any stage in the Kilkenny match that we were in trouble. Although that way in the All-Ireland, although we were 3 or 4 points behind with, I don't know, 10, 15 minutes to go or 15 minutes to go. But at no stage did I feel Kilkenny were going to beat us.
Good work again by Canis Brennan. John Ryan, the number 21 in there, alongside Brian Whelan. He has had a wonderful match once again after a shaky start.
So, I mean, we'd know absolutely no fear of Kilkenny.
The switch has worked well. And Michael Bond, the man from Galway, who came in late in the season, looks to be on the verge of an All-Ireland success. Mulhair has Kevin Martin there to assist him.
So we were never going to lose. I mean, the big trouble probably was in say, Munster, probably Clare. And we got over them. Handy.
Back down again. Hubert Rigney, it's all over. And Offaly are the All-Ireland hurling champions from 1998.
There was never a summer like 98. We've seen ourselves in those games. Bile and anger, passion and humour and bravery. A man sitting alone in a dressing room. There were prices paid that shimmering summer. Some prices beyond us.
Hubert Rigney. It's a glorious moment for Offaly, for their captain Hubert Rigney. The Liam McCarthy Cup is won by Offaly. Champions for the fourth time ever.
And Offaly came through the back door they'd voted against.
Billy Dooley in there.
Took their All-Ireland.
Johnny Pilkington as well.
And being Offaly, voted against it again the following year.
Reader of Walia, Con Nahasurum, and Karn Shah Aglaka, Herveran of Walia!
No. There was never a year like 98.
We may have come in through the back door, but we're going out the front!
You could lead him with a tread, but you couldn't drive him with an iron bell.